everyone, and welcome to Minute 32 of Season 12 of Movie Our Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film, The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome back, David.
Hello, yeah, it's a pleasure to be back. Yeah, a bit slightly more grim today's episode, today's minute, but we'll make it through.
Yes. that it is. But that's just the way that's the way this movie goes.
Yeah, it's yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I figure
I feel that this movie is a roller coaster ride because you have the highs and the lows, and they do a great job of mixing them together.
I think I forgot how kind of brutal some of it is when I rewatched it, because in my head, you remember the kind of the ending, and you remember the kind of hope and all this kind of stuff. And you watch it again, and it's like, oh, I forgot it's actually pretty brutal at times, this film. It's, as you say, roller coaster is a good way of looking at it. It's, certainly runs the gamut of it. Again, as I mentioned earlier about why it's so, so popular, I think because it runs the gamut of emotions in that way, it just kind of. It can hit everyone.
and again, it's I think the line is going to come maybe tomorrow or maybe a little later in the week about the whole idea that prison is not a fairy tale. So that's just the way it fits in, Again, we'll talk more about it later this week, but the idea that it's not sugar-coated at all also helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
That type of thing. So, minute 32 begins with Andy being given a task and ends with Boggs saying how much he enjoys fighting with Andy. So, we left things off yesterday with the foreman in the middle of the laundry area, basically sending Andy out on a little bit of an excursion, and he basically says, "Dufresne, we're running low on," and we get to hear on Hexalite. He goes, "Get on back and fetch us up some." Now, did you want to just look up to see what Hexalite is?
I couldn't quite tell you what you said, so I wasn't really able to. I don't know how to spell it. I'm not sure.
Right. So the thing is when you first look up Hexalite, it gives you a very, very strange response. It's basically the the pattern that they have on the bottom of Reebok shoes. Those are known as Hexalites. And it basically helped make the shoe stronger, that it would absorb like shock and distribute the pressure evenly, along the area. And it was like it's a honeycomb type of pattern that is used, on the bottom of the soles and stuff like that. And basically it's something that Reebok patented, and it's pretty much only in Reebok shoes that they have it. But obviously that isn't what they're talking about here. So you also have a brand of laundry detergent that's called Hex. It's called Hex Performance Laundry Detergent, which makes it a little strange that the subtitles refers to this as Hexalite or Hexalite. Maybe that's right. Hexalite.
Well, when I looked it up myself, and although I spelt it differently, I spelt Hexolite, and that does come up with something a bit different. It comes up with explosives, a potent mixture of RDX and TNT used in military ordnance, and the synthesis of nano diamonds. It's highly regulated, incredibly dangerous. And then also it's a sought after material in the video game Palworld. And also, an outdoor gear is a line of lightweight honeycomb core camping tables manufactured by Zempire at UK retailers. So, yeah, if you, yeah, so it depends what spelling I guess you're going for.
Again, the fact that there is something called Hex laundry detergent probably means that that it's that.
Suggests it's probably that. Yeah.
probably, unless you're James Bond and you're, you know, you're trying to find some you know, explosives in order to try and figure out how to get out, you know.
It might be a different prisoner just trying to his way out.
Yeah, Andy, why don't you go over there and get some blasting powder and get out of here?
They'll keep it in there somewhere. No.
Right. The problem is that when you look up the Hex laundry detergent, it's only since 2013. So again, it doesn't really make sense as to what exactly it is. But the ironic aspect of it is that the Hex laundry detergent is detergent that's specifically for washing gym clothes, activewear, and spandex. You know, I mean, obviously, I know that they're not superheroes in the in Shawshank, but the type of clothes they wear could theoretically be considered, you know, synthetic gym clothes, activewear, because they're wearing the same stuff all day. So you know. Not really sure how that fits in there. And Andy just starts after the foreman tells him, go on back and fetch us some. So Andy then walks through various rows of laundry containers, you know, and we get an idea as to the vast number of vats of laundry that these guys are doing all day, you know, and they're pretty much only doing their own laundry basically.
I love that kind of I love that tracking shot. You get a nice little tracking shot falling back, you get a real sense of the location, because they shot, the cells were shot in a studio, but a lot of the film outside of the cells is shot in a real prison. And although I think they had to date, it was pretty much like it needed a lot of decorating, though, from what they're saying in the commentaries and things. It's it was a bit of a, it was ready for demolition pretty much. So so they have added a lot. So I'd be interested to see if like all these massive things in the laundry, whether they had to bring that all in as set decoration, or if there was anything still remaining. Right. I don't know. It's be interested to know.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting way that they show us this. You see men all around, all these different vats of laundry, and then, you know, at a certain point, they basically get to, you know, Andy's completely alone, you know, that type of thing. So I just did another quick search, and basically Hexlite is a fictitious brand of industrial laundry soap. That's why we couldn't find anything else.
Okay.
Right.
And just made it up.
Right. And this article that I found also talks about the fact that, 30 years later, there would be a company that would create laundry detergent. They'd call themselves Hex.
Were they Shawshank fans, perhaps?
It's very possible. That would be really interesting if they were. You know, because, I mean, you do have these things.
It's a popular film. You never know. It's like, stranger things have happened.
That's true. They said, hey, look, let's think of a title for our brand of laundry. Like, I like Shawshank, and don't they go find this fictional thing called Hexlite? Hey, there's an idea. Let's do that.
Well, what you find sometimes, it could be a case of they were in the middle of thinking of a name, and they might have just happened to watch that film during that same time period. But you never know.
Again, there is a connection between the laundry. So, like you said, we're trying to find inspiration for a laundry scene.
Yeah.
Let's watch the scene in Shawshank where a guy almost gets raped in the laundry, area. There we go.
It wouldn't be the first thing I'd jump to, but
exactly. And so Andy's in the supply room and it's completely empty. And then we see Bog show up. You know, Andy's in the process of just picking up the detergent canister, and then he looks around and sees that Boggs and his two goons are basically trying to triangulate Andy. coming from different directions, trying to capture him. And at this point, Andy just pushes the lid off of the canister and puts his hand in and grabs a handful. And they give us a great camera shot that zooms in on Andy, as this is happening. And I think it's really cool the way that they do that.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of the scenes seem to be shot on a Steadicam. It's got that kind of slight kind of wobble to it, a smooth wobble. It's really beautifully lit, this scene. Well, I mean, the film in general is beautifully shot, but they've got really harsh low key lighting in this. So by low key, I mean they don't have a nice clean sort of fill to everything to make everything look light and cheery. It's all about the shadows. They'll have short, small blasts of light. To create strong shadows, and you'd really get that in this scene. It gives it atmosphere, makes it dark, because obviously it is a very dark scene, what's about to happen, and it's literally dark through the way they've shot it. Even though you've got these big windows in the background, it's just creating these strong contrasts in the image.
Right. And at this point, Andy is getting ready to start defending himself, because these guys are coming for him. Now, what I find really interesting, do you think the foreman is like in on this?
Oh yeah, you mean I kind of think so. I do feel like he maybe was passed a packet of cigarettes to say, "Oh, can you send Andy to go get the Hexalite, whatever it is, that made up stuff?" Then I feel like they probably have.
Right. I mean, again, we'll never know, but it seems that way, that
Yeah,
he's
yeah. Because
specifically
they're all there ready,
asking
aren't
them.
they? Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Again, I don't know the answer, and I don't know if we'll ever really know the answer, but it's one of those things that it is a possibility.
The other question is whether they had to pay a lot of people off to be able to get off whatever duties they're supposed to be doing at that minute. Because I can't imagine people can just wander around and go where they want in prison.
That's
Unless,
true also.
there's
That is a really good point.
definitely some dodgy guards going on in this prison. Well, which we
Well,
see, obviously.
we know the guards are getting paid off for
Yeah.
things. There is a lot of palms being
Greased,
greased
yeah.
in Shawshank. And as the movie progresses, we're going to see even more and more and more. It's not even something that you can say, oh well, it's only the low-level guys or whatever. No. It's everyone.
The top.
All the way from the top down. So it is something that you really need to be a little more concerned about, I guess you can say. And Andy is getting ready. He's trying to defend himself, and he goes, if you get this in your eyes, it blinds you. I gotta say, it's a very good idea for him to do this.
Yeah. He thinks very quickly about that.
That's right. To basically, go for the type of thing that is going to, cause the most damage as possible here. So why, why not? If you're able to try to find a way to defend yourself. So, why not? And then Boggs just starts shushing him, and he goes, "Honey, hush."
It's very dark. It's very one of cinema's nastiest characters, and obviously, he's yeah. It's quite his reaction's quite nice because it shows to us that he knows the other guy's coming up behind him and is not going to let him chuck his Hexite or whatever he's got in his hand that he's going to chuck at them.
Correct. And also you can look at it from the perspective that these guys know how to work together for this type of thing. For better or for worse, obviously for worse, but
Like a pack of wolves sort of thing going on.
that's right. That's actually what I was thinking of. That on the one hand they're all out for themselves, but on the other hand they know that if they work together, then it might be easier for them to capture their prey. I mean,
Yeah, and the way they do it is just like the well-oiled machine of the of the prison, of everything we see at the prison. It's just everything kind of seems like it happens all the time, which is what's kind of depressing about it. I guess that's what the film's all about, is finding hope in amongst this kind of depressing monotony of suffering.
It's true. That's what it comes down to. And then Rooster grabs Andy, and Pete runs to go try and help, and Andy ends up kicking him, and he goes flying, and then Rooster then takes Andy and throws him against a locker. And they have a row of lockers on the side there. I don't know what do you think they would keep in those lockers in a prison? Because it's not as if everyone has their own private stash in a locker type of thing.
And they're just kind of randomly spread around as well. It's almost like this is just a storage room, and maybe I think they're just getting rid of them or something. Maybe they used to be for the guards or something. I don't know, because they're a bit randomly placed. Like, usually if you've got lockers, you'll put them on a, I don't know, a back wall or something in a row, and it's a bit, yeah, they're a bit all over the place. So I do wonder if this is just a dumping ground sort of thing.
Right. So it made me start thinking, like, what's the history of lockers? You have any idea how far back, I guess, what you can call modern lockers are? I mean, we're not talking about, cupboards and things like
Strongholds or anything like that.
exactly.
No, modern, like modern style metal lockers.
No, or just stacked storage compartment type of idea.
I don't know. Well, I kind of feel like they've probably had them a long, long, long time. I don't know, but in terms of like, I don't know. I'd say a couple hundred years, maybe. I don't know.
It's about 240 years since
Okay.
they first. So 1786, the first recorded instance of a modern stacked storage compartment with padlocks on them, so you can keep your stuff safe, was in 1786 at the Harleston Green Golf Club in South Carolina. So it's the idea of let's make sure no one steals our normal clothes when we're wearing golf clothes. And in the mid 1800s, so around 1850 or so, they British warships started building them into the crew quarters in order to have let everyone keep their personal items in locked bins type of thing. It eventually moved to steel in the early 1900s because wooden lockers had problems with the mold, odor, fire, things like this. So they started using steel in order to both help the industrial factories and also they'd start adding it to schools so that students in schools would have a place to store all of their books and things that they need. And in the early 1920s, a patent was taken by a company called the Worley Company, and they started manufacturing metal school lockers in California. And they started mass producing them in the middle of the in the 1920s. That type of thing. And they ended up adding inside they added ventilation where they would have like slats for ventilation slots and things like that because people would use them in the gym and the clothes would be all smelly and stuff like that. There was a way
Wet
to
and stuff,
ventilate
yeah.
and things like that. And then in the 1960s they decided to put in built-in combination locks onto them. And therefore the kids the students didn't need to have either keys or padlock or losing the padlocks and stuff like that because it's completely built in. But nowadays they don't use that because now they there's a whole idea of the smart locker. But less students actually.
Never had a locker at high school that I remember. I mean, obviously I was in England rather than the US. And not that I remember. We used to just carry bags around with us all the time. I can't remember having a locker. Not that springs to mind. Certainly not in the same style. We might have had some kind of Yeah, I can't remember what we had. We definitely can't remember having lockers. I think it's more of an American thing. Oh, but actually, no. I think these days they tend to have some, but again, not in the same style. We don't have these kind of big long lines of them, and so I don't know. It's quite different in the UK, at least the schools I've been to. It's
Right.
yeah, some more modern
Okay.
schools occasionally,
I mean,
but no.
the irony is that nowadays, because of the digital era, they have the idea of
Yeah.
smart lockers.
We have lockers in like
Right.
gyms and things.
Exactly. But less people are using them because, in schools, because they have digital textbooks, and the idea is that students need them less. That type of thing.
Although saying that, my daughter still goes to school with this massive bag full of stuff, but it's all where you've got to bring PE kit, and they do still have some books that they have to bring in. But
Right.
yeah, it is quite different these
This
days.
is after Rooster throws Andy against the locker, so Boggs comes over and punches him in the stomach. They basically grab him in order to try and keep him stable. And then Andy is able to fight back when he elbows Boggs in the face. And Rooster then applies more pressure to Andy in order to try and get him to stop. And Boggs just looks at him and goes, "That's it. You fight. It's better that way." And he smiles at him as he's doing this. And then he we see that he reaches for his belt buckle and starts undoing his belt. And basically this is what Boggs wanted. He wants he wants to be able to take by force, that type of thing. And at that point, that's where this minute ends. So is there anything else that you wanted to add?
I don't think so. As I say, I talked to the talked about the lighting, and say it was a big thing for me, and I do think it's quite nice. I do like that almost film noir style low key lighting, but no, I think that's everything.
All right. Great. So today's segment is called Talking Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five favorite movie narrators, or movies that are narrated, however you want to look at that. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Yeah, this is. I find this surprisingly difficult. I think it's just I felt like there's a lot of films with narrators, and so what I've kind of done is I've tried to pick out some films. I actually did a bit of a search on my website, on Blueprint Review, and just look for more films that have an interesting use of narration, or a particularly strong use of narration. This is a film that's quite stylistically quite striking. And it uses narration in an interesting way further on in the film, because it's a film that's it's kind of influenced by I want to say kabuki theater. I think yeah, kind of kabuki theater, sort of Japanese traditional theater and folk tales. Sorry, bunraku, I think is what the traditional type of play that it's linked with. And the first half of the film is a bit more straightforward, but in the second half it really kind of it goes all out, to it basically turns into almost like a stage play. But part of the style of these bunraku plays, actually no, it does go into kabuki. Sorry, I'm throwing all these random words out. But anyway, but yeah, so but for some quite long sections it goes into it becomes like a kabuki play, a Japanese kabuki play. And through and as part of this, there is off-screen narration that's sung to the audience. So you've got actually narration sung in a kabuki style for this whole portion of the film that totally shifts in style from what came before. So it's quite an unusual. It's a beautiful film. Like it looks incredible. It's
What
I'd
movie is this
recommend
again?
anyone. The Mad Fox. It's from the what year was it? It was from the early 60s. It was released by Arrow a few years ago, so I don't know if it's still knocking around on Blu-ray or anything. But I thoroughly recommend it. It's a stunning, stunning film, and as I say, it's got this big shift in style partway through the film,
Well, I can always count
which
on
is
you to pick movies that most people have not seen or heard of. So that's good. You're
it.
giving us a recommendation.
Yeah, I think that the most of the rest of my list is a little bit more well known, but we'll see. But yeah, so but number four, I had to go with some film noir because film noir is famous for its kind of cool narration. So I threw in Double Indemnity, which is one of the best, one of the kind of it's one of the kind of it's not the first film noir, but it was an early kind of ground kind of big hit one that everyone thinks of with the genre, and it's written by Billy Wilder, who's a master of dialogue anyway. So the narration in this film is excellent. And then the next film, this one is a little less well known, but not quite as kind of little known as The Mad Fox, and that is My Life as a Dog. This film is I need to look it up now because I'm going to get his name wrong.
Isn't that Lasse
I
Hallström?
want to say who it is. Lasse Hallström, that's the one.
Ooh,
Yeah, that's
I'm
Lasse
surprised I
Hallström's
know
film,
it
and
too.
but it's a really it's a fantastic kind of a quite slightly unusual coming of age story, and that has got a narration that's got some humor. It's I'm trying to look at my review now to remember why I picked it. Just give a second, but it's been a little while since I've seen it. Yeah, and the voiceover narration in this it plays a major part in kind of creating kind of a black humor through the film, through partly through his obsession with finding the dark side of news stories. Like at one point he keeps talking about the fate of Laika, the first dog who's sent into space. He keeps kind of returning to that, and now how Laika was celebrated as a hero, but it bothers him that humans sent him up there knowing he wouldn't come back alive, and so the narration isn't simply just telling us the story of the film. There's more to it. It adds humor and it tells you a bit more about the character's psyche and things. So I just thought that was a good use of
Yeah,
narration.
very cool.
And then number two, I'm going to go with Sunset Boulevard. I think this is famous for its narration because it's narrated by someone who's dead. Whereas usually it's the other. Well, usually it's not like that. Quite often you'll see a film, and if you hear someone's narration, you think, "Oh, great, they're going to survive because they're narrating the film." It's like, nope. It starts off with seeing his dead body, and then he starts talking over the top. So it's a nice spin on it. And again, it's got some kind of witty lines in there to keep you moving along. And then number one is one of my all-time favorites, which is Kind Hearts and Coronets. Which has an excellent, wonderfully kind of wicked and sharply funny narration throughout. It's brilliantly delivered, really. It's as I say, it's one of my favorite films. It's brilliant. It's very funny, very clever, very dark. And it's yeah, a pleasure to
It's
revisit.
very funny that both you and Andy chose that as your top one.
Ah, yeah. Well, it doesn't surprise me too much. I know he's a big
Yeah, but
Elin fan,
that's the
so
only
no,
one
that's good.
that corresponds between the two of you.
Okay, interesting, interesting. I have to have a listen out for what his other
Yeah.
choices
All
are.
right, excellent. So now we will play the game of high low. So let's spin the wheel and see what you're gonna get. Okay, the 1954 film, The Caine Mutiny.
Caine Mutiny. Ooh, okay. Now then, I've looked up this before for a film screening, but it was a while ago. I'd say 7. I'm gonna go with 7.3 again for IMDb, and then for Rotten Tomatoes, I think it's fairly well regarded. That I'm gonna go with a 88%.
Okay, with both of those, you undershot because it's a 7.7 and a
Okay.
92.
Oh wow, 92! Wow,
Yeah.
okay, excellent.
Yeah, I gotta rewatch that one of these days. It's on my list to rewatch. Right, let's spin the wheel again. Okay, another perfect one for you because it's a foreign film. The 1972 film The Emigrants.
Oh, the Emigrants. Okay. This is a high one, I think. I think I'm going to go with 8 from IMDb, and I think it might be 100 for Rotten Tomatoes.
No. Well, first of all, you got the 8 on the button. You got that one right.
Okay.
And it is a 92%.
Oh, okay. Not as high as I thought, but
That's
still
still very
high.
high. Yeah. I am not a fan of that movie, but I know that you are. It doesn't
Well,
surprise
I
me.
haven't actually, I haven't actually seen it. It's just when I bought it, and I'm aware, very aware of it. I bought it, but I haven't
Oh,
got around
really?
to it because it's
Yes.
really long. It's really long, so I just haven't had the
Yeah,
time.
it is. It for me it was torture. But again, I'm not
Okay.
a fan of Swedish All
Okay.
right, so let's spin the wheel for your third one. Okay, a movie that is a favorite of friend of the show, Jim O'Kane, the 1962 film The Music Man.
Music Man. Oh, okay. Oh, this is tricky. I'm not sure about this one. I'm going to go. You tend to get the musicals tend to be quite high, I think, on IMDb. I think, but it's not one of the better ones. I'm going to go. I keep going 7.3. I go 7.3 again, and then for Rotten Tomatoes, I'm going to go
It's a
70.
7 point, sorry, it's 7.6 and 89.
Okay.
89, yeah.
And what, sorry, 89. Oh, wow.
Yes.
Well, that's higher
Yes,
than I
yes.
thought. You should do some like really bad films. That could be
All
interesting to see what they've gone for.
right, and now we will play the second game today of Name That Novel Adaptation. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get.
I struggled with the last one.
Okay, this is a movie from 2017, which it's also a remake of a movie from the 70s. But the original title is A Painted Devil.
Painted Devil. And it was made in the 70s as well. I'm not very good at these ones. What was made in the 70s and then remade?
It was the original one was in 1971.
I don't know. I can't think
All
of this
right,
one. No
the
idea.
movie, the 2017 version stars Nicole Kidman and is directed by Sofia Coppola.
Oh, The
And
Beguiled.
that's right. And the
Yeah.
original is
I've seen that one. I've not
1971,
seen
The
the remake, actually,
Beguiled,
but I've
with
seen it from
Clint
multiple.
Eastwood. All right, excellent. So, David, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find my writing at blueprintreview.co.uk for all your Blu-ray reviews and such.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to rob@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, get busy living.
Get busy dying.